Mile Valley lays in it. As you come down, and it crosses right there by the falls. And then it swings again, and it's down by, well, it's above Broken Neck, and it's on this side, this side of the 70 mile, clear on down. And Fox Creek is in it, too.
I'll be there.
Yeah, that's in it, too. And it's all assays about the lowest assay I've ever seen in any of it is that there coarser stuff we had, and that was 898. Yeah, and just like a couple being 900. But all of the fine stuff that is in this conglomerate area will all go over 900, and some of it is real fine, like you find on Little Ruby, the tributary of July Creek. The finer you get it on July Creek, the purer it is too. And it's over 900, 910. And the Crooked Creek is the same thing. We've had it there, I think the finest stuff we had there, and it went about 9. Yeah, I think we had one assay that went 920.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, you know, these here boys that was in the assay, a regular U.S. assay office, well, now the Yukon Placers, they never sent their gold through that. They took all their gold, it went out through that big place in Seattle. I can't think of the name of it now, and I've been in there and quite a few times. And I got acquainted, pretty well acquainted with one fellow. I was with him all the biggest part of a Sunday. He come down to assay some gold for me. And I was sitting there in the Seattle First National Bank there, and that old Norwegian that used to be the president of that bank, he had been in Fairbanks with brokers, you know, in the First National here, but he was the president down there, and I went in there, and my gosh, he was, his name that day. But oh my gosh, I had come over and we had quite a little visit there. And I told him that I had some gold I was gonna try to sell to somebody for a little bit more than what the assay office was paying for it, if I could. That's when you first could do it. And he said, there was a fella in here the other day, he said, was trying to buy some gold. And then Dan Lehman come in. You've heard of Dan Lehman, I guess. He used to be head of the Cat Department for the FP, and then he had, not FP, but the NC Company. And then he had out on around North Pole someplace along the highway there, he had a big skating rink, roller skating rink up there. And Dan come in. Sat there, and he didn't know it was me sitting there talking, and I see this in the back there, nodded his head at a fella, and he sat down in a chair back there. After a while, I kind of turned around and looked, see, it was no. Dad said, hello, Barney. And so I said, well, I'd better get out of here. I said, Dan must be wanting to do some business. He said, no, come on. He said, let's all three get together. So Dan come over. And we did. We all had quite a confab there. But while we was visiting there, pretty soon there was a fella come in. That fella says to me, she says, that fella that's wanting to buy gold, just like that. He said, run and grab him. So I trailed down and bought my gold.
You used to sell most of it in Seattle? You sold most of it out there in Seattle?
No, I didn't sell most of it. I just sold that gob. Just happened to take some out with me, see?
Mm-hmm.
And we was outside that winter quite a little while, and I took it out just to see if I could sell it. My gosh, you know, they did. And I was in Spokane too, and Mr. Lilly there, that Frank Lilly, he was president of the Hard Money Association in the United States at that time. And you know, while I was visiting with him, why, there was a knock on the door, and a Western Union boy come, and that is, he had already been to his stenographer, see, and we was sitting in his inner office, like, and so she brought this here in to him, and he looked at it, and the kid was waiting there, you know, and so he read it, and okay, and he passed it over to me, and he said that he wouldn't, I don't know, no return or nothing like that, so he would go ahead. And it gold that day on the Argentine market down in South America was $105 and some cents an ounce.
What year was that?
And that was That was the fall of 48. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you see how they do this here?
Uh-huh.
You see this here is all dirt.
Uh-huh.
Well, they get this water running along like this, and they keep it crowding. As they get the big rocks here out of this from underneath here, they throw them across there, and it keeps shoving the water over against that, you see. And they keep raking this stuff down, and the fine stuff gets in this water running here, and it takes it on.
That was when they just used flumes and didn't have the hydraulic?
Yeah, no, this here's no hydraulic, see?
Mm-hmm.
And this, and...
A lot of handwork.
Yeah, that's the handwork. You can see the tools there.
Yeah.
God dang things.
And then they would rake the stuff off of that cut down into the water.
That cut back, yeah, they'd be working in against that. It must have been a little money underneath there someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rake down into the ditch to get into water.
Yeah. Oh, you take this here, the mine and the state down there. They're putting their pay to go all over it now.
Mm.
Yeah, you get quite a bit of gold.
You would, huh?
Yeah, good boxes like I got.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones I had, you seen the pictures there, the small boxes on the side. Yeah.
You could take a captive and go down through that thing.
Oh, yeah, you could go through it pretty fast, you know. Well, if you take just below that camp up there, that upper camp, down there toward the lower end of my airstrip that I had there, that on that side and up on the hillside there, that's good. Yeah, that's good up there.
This is another ditch, though.
Oh, I'd never left Crooked if I hadn't had that. If I hadn't had that ground down on Benford. No, I'd never left. But even the crowd is getting it. What he's doing here.
Now that, they're just building a ditch.
They're lining it with rocks,
mm-hmm.
so it won't cave in and wash away. They put rocks on the bottom.
Mm.
Yeah, so because your water from the giants, you know, if you don't have a ditch that will confine the water and pack the stuff away, why, you pretty quick you wouldn't have any drainage.
Mm.
And you can't hydraulic unless you can drain it.
Oh.
That's the first law of hydraulics, is drainage.
You think that was a drainage ditch then?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a drainage ditch. It's down below this here's probably even in bedrock a little ways.
Okay, so they're hydraulicking then?
Yeah. Yeah. Bedrock here is softer than the upper stuff.
So that ditch is all together for a different purpose than this other one here.
Yeah, this is up above.
Yeah.
This is that's above working. Bedrock, and this is probably, chances are, below some of it.
Okay.
Yeah, look at all the big rocks they've hauled. They're handling them, rattling those rocks around.
Yeah.
Yeah. course. I helped do it.
Amen.
Yeah, this is, yeah, this is down below the camp, the upper camp quite a ways. This is above the upper camp. Yeah. This is about where that, you know, this goes, and you know above this here bluff that's there, that they put the creek over on that side so that they could work on this side, you see.
Uh-huh.
They changed the creek and got it all going off on that side. And it went clear down around and past that bluff coming down there. And I went down there one time, and I didn't figure it was too darn deep, you know, to bedrock in that channel. And I had to dig probably about that deep. Huh. It panned dang good.
Yeah,
it panned as good as where I was working or better.
Huh.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of ground right there to put in. And,
Barney, how's that creek over here, this Jack Wade Creek, where there's poop around all the time? Is that any good?
Why, I'll tell you, old George has been doing pretty good there.
Yeah,
he's just sniping. See, they went up the creek.
With a dredge?
Yeah, no, they went up there with the, now they went up as far as that old, where that old dredge is laying.
Yeah.
That's as far as they got. And they broke the ladder on it, the digging ladder. And not the buckets, you know, but just the digging ladder that the buckets run on. And that's what they call that, the digging ladder. And they couldn't get any steel to repair it.
Huh.
Yeah, it was during this Second World War. Yeah, the Yukon Placers had fixed up that old dredge. And that used to be an old steamboat, the steam dredge. And when Cowden had it, and there, and they fixed it up, put new machinery in it, that is a new diesel instead of wood burner, see, instead of steam. Yeah, old Dick Hawley, old Captain Hawley, one of the first things he did in Alaska was cut wood there on Wade Creek up on the hillside down below there before you come to Walker's Fork up in there.
Yeah.
And then he was a pilot before he ever come up here.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then he's been an instructor for quite a while in Kansas City at the airport there.
Uh-huh.
And he came up here and he got a job there. And after I followed. Oh, yeah. And well, two. He was a couple of winters before he went to flying. And Dick studied to be a geologist, and that's what he really is. But he learned to fly. His dad was a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and his dad was in the First World War too. Dick's father was. And anyway, but so Dick, he went after he worked over there cutting wood. He got himself a dog team. Oh yeah, he had to have a dog team too, you know, like a lot of newcomers up in Alaska. And he got acquainted with old Galen Fry over there at Richardson. And old Galen was the postmaster at Richardson. And Dick went from Richardson right straight across the Tanana Valley to the mountains back there. And that's where he trapped for two winters. And he'd come back before the breakup, before the Tanana busted, so he could get across, you know. And he worked over there on Wade for that couple of summers there for a while. And then he went to flying for Frank Pollock. Yeah.
Mm.
And of course he never done anything after that. But this here picture here, that's in the spring. That's when the breakup comes.
But it looks like a real drop down
there. Yeah, it is.
Is that just over ice?
Yeah, that's ice, yeah. They, you can see where their boxes are quite a ways up. There. You can see the backstop hangers on the boxes. The boxes are just pretty near there. But you see, when you have a long string of boxes, one man of life. Now you take down that Julactric, we'd had as many as 15 boxes set in a string.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you give those about 8-10 inches to the box, it makes quite a few feet. And your head box is way up there, and your tail box down here where the water, and you've got to have a place where the water can get away, so you go down in bedrock for a long ways in that conglomerate, you can do it. And that way you can have such a long string of boxes, and that way you can. Now you take where you say you've got 100 feet of boxes, and you take 150 feet on each side, and 150 feet on this side, and get that all in. See, you've got 300,000 square feet of bedrock. That's quite an area.
Now, in the fall, did they move all of their flumes and their boxes and stuff so that it didn't freeze in?
No, they always set them in the fall, the last thing, to get them set so that they'd be ready in the spring. And you take and put long willow poles, tack them onto the box, you know, so that they'd be sticking up, and that way it's all... I don't know. It seems like I never saw it fail. Well, I never saw it fail yet, but it didn't glacier where you started mining. After you, the way you know the groundwater, you got it. You're down so that everything will drain. You're on bedrock. Well, the water that's coming down the valley is on that bedrock. See, and the blooming stuff will keep on going out and build up and build up, and it finally come out of the top, see, and keep right on it going, and you got the awfulest mess down there at July Creek. I've seen it, oh, it's the same way with the dredges over there with the FB company. Up there on Esther Creek, below the dredge pond there, fine. Golly, I'll tell you that there valley was just nothing but a big sea of ice. Yeah, ahead of the, you know, where it hadn't mm-hmm. been dug yet. Yeah.
Hmm. Then you dynamited out in the springs
yeah.
so you could get your ditches where you wanted
yeah.
the water to go. And then you used the spring runoff water, huh?
Yeah. And just as soon as the water come, why you start getting the ditch fixed and one thing is that it let get the water running where you want it. Yeah, not where the water wants to run,
mm-hmm.
but where you want it to go. And it'll cut a little bit every day. It isn't very warm at first, but it'll cut a little. And the first part of the boxes will show up first. But way down in here, where the thumb pole is, at the tail end of the boxes, one man of life, you know. And you got to get it to go in there too, and follow it. Well, you take it and mark off your ditch, even your drainage, your waste ditch from the sump hole or from the back end of your boxes. You have it all marked off so that you can get the water running there. And it's quite a chore, by golly. And we take and. We always took the boiler and thaw down holes, and of course they'd be full of water, but that didn't hurt it a bit. You'd just take and go and cut a whole mess of willow shoots, you know, suckers like, and you'd take and tie a bunch of them, tie a couple of sticks. Oh, some of them just one stick, but it wasn't too deep, you know. Why, just one stick was pretty good, but you take the stick, tie two sticks to it with a string, and you'd light it, and then shove it down in that hole, right down in the water. And you'd have to have a rock there to kind of put in there so it, or to float up, see, to hold it down. And, you'd have to get that stuff all ready first, And then when you took and had a piece of fuse, you'd light that and you'd run along and light the different ones, you see, and then duck. They'd run like that and they'd go bang, 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 bang on ice blast. Yeah.
Now you had lots of experiences there, Barney.
Oh, yeah. And you know, down on July Creek. Now, there'd been old George Matlock had been the boss there. That is, he'd been the main one for that Cedar Woolley outfit. And you know, there was a lot those old fellas didn't know about bracing or different things, bracing their pipelines and stuff, you know. They sure didn't. And I'm pretty sure that this here is Gus Douglas. It looks like him. He worked out there at Frolics for quite a long time. This is Chevron Inn.
That's before hydraulicing or after?
Yeah, no, this here is this here is shoveling into the boxes. The box is elevated there, you see.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My gosh, he's shoveling pretty deep too. My gosh, you can see how deep it is there. How deep it is right by his, right from here, you see, up along there, and he's shoveling in quite a lot of stuff.
Barney, what in your judgment was the best creek around here, you know?
The best creek around here was Alder Creek.
Yeah.
That is in this neck of the woods. Of course, American Creek was pretty good, but there wasn't no great awful amount taken out of American Creek or Discovery Fork. Oh, there's quite
the
a lot
creek
taken out.
Now, you're talking about the Alder Creek that runs into O'Brien or the
no,
Alder Creek?
Alder Creek that runs into the 70
mile.
Yeah, way up there, 65
yeah.
miles out.
Yeah.
Yeah, old Burke. Now, old Jim Murphy, he worked on that first. And he was above six, he was on seven. That's from the mouth of the 70 mile. I mean, the mouth of Alder Creek was run into the 70 mile. And the cabin is on the upper end of five. So it's about a mile and a quarter.
What are you talking about? Five above Discovery?
Yeah. Well, or five above. They started out one, two, three, four, five, see, on the mouth of it. And six and seven. And old Murphy, he was on. Seven, but he didn't know it. He was right at the mouth of the canyon, like, and he was ground sluicing in there, and he fixed up a dam. I don't know, there might be some of that old dam yet that you can see.
Is this Bob Murray?
No, it's old Jim Murphy.
Jim Murphy.
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 Yeah. And
did Bob Murray ever mine? He just
he mined his first mining. Now he come in 98, he and two other fellas come down the river in 98 in the spring with the rest of them. He was come in the fall up there and got his stuff up over the pass, built him stay, and he was by himself start with, but there was a couple of other fellas and they all kind of went together and wound up coming down the river together. And when they got here that spring of 98, it was in June, I suppose, or July, because you take the lakes up there, didn't go out until June, because If it hadn't have been for the steamboat outfit breaking the channel down to the barge, and why, they'd never been here near for a month yet, you know.
No.
But you see, they took them, they had a little old Model T that they used to come down the river with, down the lake, at Lake the Barge, and they had a rigging just the same as one of these alfalfa seeders that you seed alfalfa seed with. And you've got a crank on it, and it's got a little table here that whirls around and got little fins on it. And you carry it down in front of you here, but you've got a little hopper up here where it feeds the seed down to it, see? And it whirls it. Well, they done that with lampblack seed.
Yeah.
But they done it right there sitting on the back end of this here little old Ford pickup. Their little Ford truck there, and they went right down the lake where the steamboat channel was, you know, where they went for the steamboat, and that lampblack would go out, and that would help cut the snow and the ice, melting the ice when the sun come out, see?
Mm.
Yeah, that's the way they got here as early as they did. Get here around the most generally the 3rd, 4th, or 5th. It never was over a week difference. It was most generally 3 or 4 days difference.
The steamboats?
Yeah.
In June or July?
It was in June.
First part?
Yeah. Most generally get here the 3rd, 4th, or 5th, or 6th, something along in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what was the latest they ran on the river?
In the fall? Oh, geez, a long time ago they got stuck and froze up in the ice right over here at the lower end of the island down here.
Saw a picture with the river looking full of ice.
Late years, for years there when the steamboat was get the Yukon down, you know. Why, the latter part of September, she most generally go back up river around from the 20th. It depended on the day that she went down past here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was her schedule was 10 days from eagle to eagle. When she'd go by here, 10 days and she was back here. And that's just the way it went, you know. All summer long, every 10 days, the boat was here.
Anyway, Bob Murray came into Eagle in 98 then.
He came in 98, yeah. He was born in Nova Scotia, Bob Murray. And he went to Minnesota, and he worked in the woods for a while there. And then he went to North Dakota and worked in the harvest fields. And from North Dakota, he went to the state of Washington, the Northern Pacific Railroad was putting a tunnel through the Cascade Mountains. And Bob worked on that Stampede Tunnel. It's up in the, goes through the Cascades there. And he got canned. It wasn't Bob's fault. There something happened, but Bob didn't squeal on the other guy. And so Bob said he was figuring on quitting anyhow. And he went over above Cedar Woolley. He went to what the heck's the name of that river up there? Snohomish, the Wabash or some river up there. Logan. And he worked there a while. And that was in the 80s. Well, he worked there in Washington for quite a little while. And then in 98, when the big gold rush went on, why, he went up and got off the Skagway. And he took an outfit, went to Dyea and up over the pass, you know. Got his stuff over on the other side. And that winter, he and a couple other fellas finally threw together and built this barn that they built, it's kind of a cow, and they come all the way down with it and got off here at Eagle. And they were going to go way back in the 40-mile country there, where further than anybody had ever been to, where nobody had ever been before. Boy, they were going to find her. Bob said, by gosh, the further they went, he said, the more work had been done. So they stopped on the North Fork there, and that 4th of July, they named a creek over there that run into the North Fork, or into Eureka, as it's called. And they call that 4th of July Creek. That's another July Creek.
Yeah.
And then there's another one they call Jim Creek. That was one of the fuller's names, Jim Creek. It's called Jim Creek. And then they prospected on another creek, and they found some gold. And that's how that creek got to be called Gold Run. One of them says, by gosh, he says, this is where the gold runs. Let's call her Gold Run. That's where the run of gold is. But Bob stayed there for 6 years. And you get poorer every year. So Bob was quite a worker too, you know. It wasn't very good. And he said if it hadn't have been for trapping and catching the little fur in the wintertime, why, he wouldn't have stayed that long. But he's always looking. And he finally quit and come to Eagle. And he got a lay on somebody's out there just below where that little coach cabin is out there, you know, it's right to that little
gravel.
Left-hand side used to be a cabin set there, and that's where Bob Murray had his cabin. And when they didn't want to ruin it, I guess, when they put the road through, so they went behind it. You can see, if you know where to look, you can see where the foundation or some of the place where the old cabin did sit. But he worked there in Discovery Fork. Well, that's Discovery Fork from the mouth down there where it runs into American Creek, the Star Gulch. And from Star Gulch on up, it's Gravel Gulch.
Mm.
Yeah. Not at the bridge, it's down there at Star Gulch. Mm. That's where Discovery Fork ends. That culvert there where little Star Gulch runs mm-hmm. in. A lot of people, they don't know the difference. They call the whole thing Gravel Gulch and stuff, but it's Discovery Fork from Wyman's place up.
Mm.
There was quite a lot of money taken out of that blooming little creek, too. Yeah, it's all handwork, every bit of it. There's one fella there, his name was Kershaw. And you can see, I know old Bert showed me where he worked. Of course, that was before the road went up. Then it was the same, it was the little old road that went up before, you know, and that was right down by the creek. And went across right there on that bend. Just you go to start up that little hill there, above Wyman's place there. Well, it crossed there and went up the other side. It went up the other side until you got up there. Oh, darn near, clear around the past Gravel Gulch. She was on the right hand side instead of the left hand side of the creek there. And then you got away up there toward where that bridge is, and then you went over on that side and up to where the cabins are. And that's where the old road went up clear to the summit. And on that side instead of on the right hand side up through the woods.
Didn't Bob Murray live right here in town for a while? Didn't he garden a lot?
Yes, in his latter years. Now, he had and after that, he was up on American Creek, there on that green bench, at the lower end of the green bench. and he and Abe Mom worked together. And Bob was out there working, and Abe Mom was in town. I forget now what the heck Bob said he was doing. But somebody must have poisoned his ear or something, because he came out there and Abe, I guess, and said that Bob was stealing from him. Something Bob said he never steal from nobody, you know, never thought. But he said that when the band starts thinking like that, he said it's time to quit being partners anyway. So he quit. And he worked a while longer out there, quite a little while longer out there. And then he come to town, and he and Johnny Olson, they put up an eating house and it was on that road, that street that goes from where the gas pump is up here, down to where the old Riverside house used to be. Well, they had a place there that was just this side of the old AT&T company's big building there, but on this side of the road. And they had a little restaurant there. And
what did they call it?
Oh, darn if I know what they called it. But they had that little restaurant there and a bar with it, you know. And Bob said we were our own best customers. Him and Johnny, well, Johnny would be the best customer, because that's... I was right. Anyway, that fell through with. And that's when he went to farming from then on. And he stayed at farming and cutting wood and hauling wood into town and selling it. He always had a horse, and got himself a horse or a mule. But in latter years, he had a horse, his old mule had played out.
Did he die here?
Yeah.
He's buried up there. They used to talk about...
Bob Murray, you mean?
Uh-huh.
No. He's in Sitka.
Oh, he went to the home then.
Yeah, he went to the home. He finally did. He the poor old fella couldn't see. And he used to, he hated to ask somebody to help him, you know, or to do something. Well, when he wanted his stovepipe cleaned out or something, you know, I always used to go home and do it for him, because we just lived across the street from him, you know, where this Ivy's living. And,
Oh, he lived in that little cabin across the street from your place.
Yeah, that was Bob Murray's place. Yeah, that's where he lived for years and years.
Did he build it?
Not that I know of, no. But I'll tell you, he did put on that there siding that's on the side of it. It's a log cabin underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this one right across the street here. Oh, right next to you here.
Mm-hmm.
No, right here. Yeah. Let me get my... look out and see where they came.
He did pretty good on Alder Creek, though, huh?
Yeah, Alder Creek was pretty fair. Alder Creek was a good creek. Now, old Bert Bryant, now he worked on Alder Creek, and the way he found it was the Hudson boys, Jim and Ted Hudson, that remind later years over in the Livengood. They went on the Livengood stampede from here. And they got into on to some of the pretty good ground. Well, old Ted done real well. And of course, Jim, he was just a helper. Ted, he was a businessman too, you see. And Jim and Ted was the one that was over on Copper Creek that sunk that run that drift into the hill over there on Copper Creek, tributary of Charlie River, you know. And over there, Bert Bryant was packing grub to them. And old Lady Broad, or Mrs. Omo, old Lady Broad, she and Jim Hudson, they used to shack up together for all the time anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big, tall fella, and she was a little bit of a thing, and some bow-legged is like that. Well, she, of course, the poor old lady couldn't help it, but anyway, they did. And, Bert packed this stuff in there. He always had a horse or a mule, Bert did. He was always packing. He come in as a packer for the army here in 98. It was a post here on the telegraph line. And he packed this stuff from here out there to them when they was working out there. And one time as he was coming back in on the trail, it had been raining, and Alder Creek was so doggone high, he couldn't get across with a horse. So he just had to stay there and sweat it out. And he was watching the water, so when he thought he'd get there, and as the water went down a little bit, there was a rim stuck out there, and he happened to, my gosh, there's a nice big nugget laying here, and there was another one, you know, that got uncovered with this here high water. Well, he staked it. He staked it from way up there by where Jim Murphy was, you know, on down. And he didn't say anything to the Hudson boys about it at all. But he comes in and he gets more stuff and takes it out. And about that time, why, the livelihood stampede was on. So the Hudson boys took off for livelihood.
What year was that stampede, do you remember?
Oh, it was in the teens. It was a long time before my time. But now it wasn't too. I know I had been in Southeastern or as far as Kedgway or Whitehorse, and after I'd gone out, after I'd been there a year or two, is when the livelihood stampede. Yeah, I heard about the livelihood stampede.
You were in Whitehorse when? 19?
15. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's as far as I got.
Mm-hmm.
But I promised not to go, be gone just so long, and I couldn't go any further and get back, because haying was coming along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, by gosh, you know, you couldn't find work every place those days either. And not a place like I had.
Did Bob Murray do pretty good with the gardening, farming?
Yeah, Bob done pretty good. In fact, he made some money. That's the first time he'd ever made any money, was with his gardening and wood cutting. Because he even bought some of that there stock in the outfit outside. Charlie Ott bought some stock in it too. I don't know what they've ever done about that. But now I give the stock, Bob give me that stock. He wanted me to have it, because I'd been so much help to him here. And I told him, I said, I didn't want it, Bob. I said, you might be able to sell it. And I said, you need a little money when you go to Sitka. He was bound and determined then to go to Sitka, you know. And I used to tell him, I said, heck, you don't need to go down there. We'll take care of you, Bob. Oh, hell, he didn't want to be a burden on anybody. He didn't want anybody doing anything for him. And,
what year did he go, do you remember?
Let's see. No, I really don't, but it must have been long in the early 50s or something. It's been gone quite a while. My gosh, you know, I just don't know. I can't remember. But the worst of it was, is when they'd leave here and go out in the creeks in the summer, the poor old fellow was here by himself, you see, and that's he wanted to go out and cut wood. He was still physically all right, but his eyes were so full of cataracts he couldn't see nothing. And I was right from home there. I used to keep a pretty good watch on the old fellow, you know, and I caught him out there by the airport trying to, with his cane, trying to find the trail where it went across the airport, see. And he was off of it quite a little ways, and I'd run out there and get the old boy straightened out. But, you know, he could if he could get over to where his wood was, why, he'd do pretty good. Yeah, but he just couldn't see far enough to. Yeah, the poor old fellow, by gosh, it was struggling. And when he was by himself, of course, he had the feeling too that he might get lost sometime and not get back. And be nobody around to hear him holler or anything else.
That's that same windlass, I guess, huh?
Yeah, this is it. Well, you can see that down there where they've hoisted and thrown the big rocks out to that ground down there.
That's
underneath.
That's a good one, isn't it? Yeah,
that's a clearer picture.
Looks like a lot of water here.
Yeah.
A lot of canvas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They used to get by that old canvas hose, too. Big stuff. Boy, it was big old heavy stuff. Yeah. Boy, that's wasn't very much pressure, was it?
Now, was that the beginning, the hydraulicking, or is that just a canvas hose?
Yeah, that's when they were, they didn't get to move any ground with it to mount anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was mainly just to get the water where they wanted it. And, they could wash away a lot of muck with it, though. They could stand there, you know, and move that doggone old thing. They couldn't have to move it but jerks, you know. You see that big old thing? You see that there, that pole underneath there, blocked up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what this thing's laying on, see? The front end of this here big old kind of a nozzle they got going out there. Yeah. Now that's just a piece of big pipe that old Jack Shields made here in Eagle, riveted together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they can wash away quite a bit with it, you know, and wash away the muck, you know, and stuff. This here, you see this flume laying along the ground up there, along there, that's where that hose is. So, now this here is coming out of this, you see there's another trussle here. And I think that it's coming out of this one, I'm not sure. It's coming from this one here, and they've got some water running over.
They're losing a lot, aren't
they? Yeah, they're losing it. Well, they're letting it go there. That's, instead of running to the head of the ditch and trying to keep it just what's going in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it, there's another trestle there, you see, and that. Going over, and this here water's coming away up here and around through this hose. That's more or less just to take a picture of this here.
They built those trestles up high in order to get some pressure to drop down from.
That's right. They brought a ditch around the hill here.
Mm-hmm.
Come away up around here. And this here, these flumes here, they went right into that ditch. And they built them out on a they give them probably a couple of feet to the 100,
uh-huh.
or maybe a foot and a half to the 100 feet in the flume, so the water wouldn't stay kind of dead in it, you know, it'd be running.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the same flume that up here is these.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, on the ditches, though, in the ground here, you only use about each or so to the 100.
Was this the same place? Was this the same place that just had the one flume, or is that a different place?
No, this here is, this is the same place. Same place, exactly.
They had just built one yet?
Yeah, this here is, here's the ditch, it's still there. That ditch is still there. Out there. That is the, you can see where it was.
But you see, these pictures show three big flumes, you know, up in there,
yeah,
a lot of them,
so many
eventually, and that one just has one.
It was...
that the first one, you think?
Yeah, no, it isn't the first one.
course, I had work to do, but I get listening to Barney, you see. I'd rather listen to him than work.
Yeah, they start down here and keep working up, and they just put another plume up, you see, instead of tearing the other one down.
Oh,
uh-huh. Yeah. That's the reason they had those three of them. They could get some more mucked off up above there so it would be thawing down, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Yeah, this one looks like, is that where they dropped the water down?
That's where they had it.
No.
Yeah, that's where they had the plume, the pipeline. You see, and they brought it clear on down, hanging down here, and come down in these boxes, see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's running right here. We've got it coming down across here and running there. I don't know what they had it for, but here's that drain here. Here you see.
This one looks like
they've
got the...
See how they brought the drain up here?
Oh, yeah.
It's all rocked up.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it from sloughing in.
This one looks like canvas hose just hanging over something there.
Out drying.
They had to dry it out.
Yeah, you dry it out so that you could handle it.
Oh.
All the doggone stuff was so big and heavy, you know, that if it wasn't dry, you couldn't hardly move it.
This looks like he's getting more pressure there.
Oh, this is a different outfit now. This is okay. After they got the hydraulic and, yeah.
That was better hydraulicing. That was
more. That pipeline is quite. Their ditch was quite a long ways up the hill here. Yeah, they're stripping. They're just getting rid of the muck.
Is that the same place?
No, this here is piping. This here is the boxes are set up here. This is the tailing giant here. And you see the back end of the box is right here.
Mm-hmm.
You see the box is right there?
Yeah.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see that runs into this hole here. And they keep it, and you always keep what they call a gooseneck bend. Now the water out of this hole that goes down the ditch goes back down around here, see? See where it's lined up here?
Mm-hmm.
Goes here. And that gives him a chance to keep all of the stuff out from going down, just letting the water go down. But some fellas didn't understand doing that, you know. And they'd have a heck of a time. And every so often they'd have to go down and start and shovel out the tail ditch, tail drain. They had a great big young fella down there working. I'll tell you who had him working. Heine Miller. Name was Johnson. Oh, he was a big skookum rascal. Oh, he was a big boy. He was about 6.5 feet and built in proportion, Jim. Oh, he was one of the biggest boys I ever saw. And he could take a rock, you know, that anybody else couldn't do, and he'd just pick it up and he looked like, oh, God. Gus Douglas, you know, he'd struggle around with a rock just trying to roll it. He'd say, why don't you pick it up, Gus? And it's got sand on it or something like that, you know. He'd go over there and get out of the road desk. He'd take it and pick it up and heave it over like nothing, you know. Boy, he was a powerful brute.
Heine Miller used to mine?
No. He was hauling wood for Heine Miller.
Oh, yeah.
And that summer, Heine Miller, he just done most his work in the wintertime, hauling wood on the ice, you see, down there in the snow, sledding it in, piling it up. And then in the summertime, why, it'd all be piled up right there. And the only thing is, old Heine could just about do it himself with his horse and haul it out. But later years, he got his little cat. And they hauled it in out of the woods for the cat, see. And he had all these natives down there cutting wood. And if it hadn't have been for that, old Heine even and his wood deal, you know, by the way, some of these folks had had pretty tough sledding. Because there was nobody got any money those days, you know, for nothing. You had to work to get it.
And, did a lot of the Indians from the village here cut wood
for you? Sure.
Which ones?
We've got, you've seen those pictures of, like of that raft made up and it all going down the Sheep Creek in the fall here. Yeah, heck, yeah, they'd have a boat and they laid and they'd have rafts and the dogs and kids and stuff on rafts and stuff, but they'd be hitting for
sure hell.
For Sheep Creek.
Willie and all of them were down there.
Oh, yeah, sure. And Art Stevens and Sophie and the different ones, I mean, they were all, they used to live down there. In fact, they had cabins there that they had put up, you know, and they were down there every year. And they trapped a little bit along with their wood cutting, you know. And they made it. But this here is looking downstream. What is needed? Looking upstream. Yeah, looking upstream. No, this is taken away down. Way down where they, not far from where they were started. Oh, that hill right there, no, it isn't either. This is taken above where the upper camp is. Yeah, there's the bluff. Right. But they've got down, and they're just working the whole thing, see? That's where they're, when they was working with their old hoses.
These pictures pretty well show three different stages of mining, don't they? That one with the windlass where they were, and then they got the canvas hose and the flumes, and then they got the pipe, huh, the hydraulic
that's
pipe.
That's about it, yeah.
That's shown in these pictures. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the building in that picture?
Oh, that's a tent they had over there so that they didn't have to run clear. They'd have a place like that so that they, even in case it was raining, they could at least get in there and eat the lunch in there without getting drowned. Yeah. Even when there was hydraulics, they most generally had a tent up, you know, so that, because they were as far from here to Powers as away from the cabbage, you know, sometimes. Got quite a ways from the, well, when they was way up there toward the upper camp, you know, where old Coomer was, they were a long way from his place. Or when they started on the lower end, where they were still half a mile of camp, you know. This flume right here has got a hose laying down it.
They seem to use a lot of these kind of little benches here. So they got some over in there.
Yeah.
Did they lay the flumes on those or what?
Well, that isn't, that's just kind of where their limits, where they left off. And
got a lot of them around over here too. And
that's where they've got their hose laid down. Down through there. They've had the creek. They had the creek running over on this side here. You see, they got a foot log across it, a couple of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this here is looking downstream because here's that bluff down here, and these fields you hear. See in the distance, they're on the other side of the 70 mile. And this here picture is taken just right opposite where those upper cabins are now, where we lived. That's where this picture's taken. And you know, right here at the mouth of this little draw, around in there, gosh, you know that there, that's good ground. Dick and Shorty put in a couple of holes. Oh, that's a couple of hundred feet up. And Dick said it was better than it was down in the bottom.
Is this up at Crooked Creek?
Yeah, all these pictures are all taken in Crooked. Yeah, there's the penstock, you see, and the pipeline coming from the ditch. You see this here?
Mm-hmm.
That there is the penstock, as they call it there. That's what they got this here. Old Frolic, you know, he had a funny idea. He was a Dutchman. And a lot of them was pretty smart, but I mean, Frolic, he had the idea that if you had a pipe that was 8 feet in diameter, clear on up, and a great big penstock that was as big as this room, some of them he built was pretty near the size of it, and you had a couple of feet of water in that, you know, coming out of your ditch, why, you'd have a lot more pressure. Oh, give you big pressure. But he didn't realize that it didn't make any difference how high that was up. The only thing that you could have, that would have cut down on his pressure, would have been friction loss with a hydraulic flow of water, see? But it wouldn't be any difference. Now you take a column of water 100 feet high, an inch square, and on the static pressure, it is 43 4/10 pounds of pressure on the bottom, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's on a 20-inch pipe or anything. An inch square on the bottom of that there is still 43 4/10 pounds of pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, they didn't study hydraulics, see?
No.
Well, I did. A long time ago, I don't know why, but you know, in the wintertime there on the ranch, those long evenings and stuff, you know, I studied hydraulics, and I learned a heck of a lot of stuff. Now you take a centrifugal pump, a volume pump, you have a small diameter impeller, and wide. The wider it is, the bigger volume. But you only get so much pressure. And the bigger in diameter that your impeller is, and you see, your discharge is always on the out end, outside from the ring. Well, the bigger it is, the higher the pressure you get. Well, you take on an automobile engine, the cooling system. The reason they had those little centrifugal pumps was because it would only develop so much pressure. If you had a piston pump and something plugged up your carburetor, I mean your radiator or something like that, a piston pump would bust it. Well, in order to have a flow of water instead of the old thermal flow like the Model T had, in the bigger automobiles, they had to have it going through and a faster cooling system. Well, they used this here